Are you ready?
Welcome back. It's an exciting enterprise. Wolfgang Pauli's dreams. I thought we'd start off with a review, and I picked out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 dreams just to kind of go over to prime the pump a little bit. If you want to follow along in your manuscript, you're welcome to or not. The very first dream was on page 18. I think I will read the dream, and then I'll just summarize it. At the top, there was a window to the right of it, a clock. In the dream, I draw an oscillation process beneath the window, actually two oscillations, one beneath the other. By turning to the right from the curves, I try to see the time on the clock. The clock is too high, so that doesn't work. Then the dream continues. The dark, unknown woman appears. She is crying because she wants to write a book but cannot find a publisher for it. In this book, there is apparently a great deal of material on time symbolism. For example, how a period of time is constituted when certain symbols appear in it. And at the end of one page of the book, there are the following words read aloud by the voice. The definite hours have to be paid for with the definite life, and the indefinite hours have to be paid for with the indefinite life. Basic idea there is the curves, the oscillations. And that had to do with Pauli's difficulty in accepting that there are different qualitative moments of time, specifically synchronicity, that time can present us with new possibilities in special moments, that there is such a thing as a special moment. And why would that be so hard for him? Well, because reason has no way of conceptualizing this. This is an emotional truth. So it also brings up the problem he's going to have with the irrational versus the rational. A theme we'll be seeing throughout is that a book wants to be written. The dark unknown woman wants to write a book but can't find a publisher. So his dark anima wants a book published, and beneath all the psychological stuff that we're talking about is going to be that there is a practical demand being put on Pauli that he shift his creative work towards what this woman represents. That's it in a nutshell. The second dream is on page 24. There at the bottom. Through the post, I receive, and it should be a chest, we decided. Sort of a treasure chest. Inside it is an apparatus for the experimental investigation of cosmic rays. Next to it is a tall, blonde man. He seems to be somewhat younger than me, maybe between 30 and 40. He says you must force the water up higher than the houses in the city so that the city dwellers will believe you. Then behind the apparatus in the little box, I notice a bunch of eight keys, eight in all, arranged in a circle with the key bits hanging down. Pauli then made a comment that there were previous dreams of floods, and in those dreams it was a figure called the Persian who was instigating a flood. And we're going to see for a while that the dreams flip back and forth. Sometimes Pauli dreams of this blonde guy. Sometimes he dreams of a figure called the Persian. Later, these two are going to coalesce into a single figure called the Stranger. And that Stranger will represent this mysterious backdrop of life, which falls into time and space in certain moments in the synchronicity and serves as a directing force. So you can see the link between the oscillations and this blonde guy and this Persian eventually becoming the Stranger as representative of that reality that does break in that special qualitative moment of time. Does that all make sense to everybody? I think that's the basic message of the dream. We'll be looking at the meaning of the Persian. We'll be looking at the meaning of the blonde. We'll be looking at the Stranger. detail the experimental, the apparatus for the experimental investigation of cosmic rays. Those cosmic rays would simply be the archetypal influence from the psyche that he has to begin to try to understand. So his problem isn't so much just a personal problem, although we're going to see that dimension of it, but it's an archetypal problem, meaning that he is to convey a message to his times about the way life is seen. That's what the collective unconscious is. It's not where you have your own personal issues about seeing, but where the times as a whole needs to adjust its way of seeing. And in particular, for Pali, it would be the scientific worldview. Page 36, I'm skipping ahead to Dream 6. There are two young men present. I take them for Americans and know that they are physicists. But I'm very embarrassed because I don't know their names and they appear to expect me to do so. I address both of them with made-up names that don't appear to be correct. Now one of the two men leaves. The other, however, remains and says in a rebuking way, always this uncommitted archetypal thinking which the physics books are full of. So that's showing us Pauli's temptation and habit, I guess, to just lather hot air about things. We'll see time and time again his interpretations are intellectual, they're defensive, they really don't get to the heart of the issue. And he's being told in this dream very clearly that he does that. And it's really, you know, the tragedy of the guy that for all this work, nothing of lasting importance really does finally occur, and that's because of this lack of commitment. He was so good with his mind, he could come up with many explanations and then just go on as if that never happened. We'll see in a dream today, for example, he writes, I think it's Frau Jaffe or Ron Franz, I forget which, but oh, how upset he is that he hurts women's feelings. And then he goes off and does it, you know, time and time again. That's the kind of uncommitted archetypal thinking that he's talking about.
You may have mentioned this before, but why did they say archetypal? Like, I mean, that just doesn't jive.
Well, I think it's said tongue-in-cheek that he uses this full-blown mythological, these full-blown mythological explanations as if he's understanding the dream, and all he's doing is just talking with big, sometimes mythological words.
So archetypal in the sense that it's just patriarchal,
even more literal, that he makes reference to the concept of archetype, he makes reference to the concept of myth, he uses mythological images in his talk. He's got all the Jungian talk down perfectly. But it is not connected to the heart. I think that's a great danger of our work, that there's so much to understand, and we have so many concepts to try to explain our experience, that the concepts and the language becomes a substitute for the experience. I think it's a real danger. So people just spout off things and then they go live their own rotten lives. It's not to say you shouldn't have the concepts, but the concepts should be connected up with experience. On that same page, nothing new in the Dream 7, Roman number 1, I'm alone with a woman. She leads me into a dark room, and I think to myself, I know what goes on here. But in the dark room, she says to me, get a pen. I want to dictate an essay to you. I wake completely confused. So it shows the relationship between his sexuality and his creativity. He is attracted to women. I don't know how much of a Don Juan he ended up being, but I'm sure he wasn't faithful, and I wouldn't be surprised if he visited brothels, even as a married man. What is really behind that erotic charge is an anima, And what that anima really wants is creativity. But failing his ability to understand that she wants creativity, he just experiences her as sexuality. And that's what's being presented here. And where that's going to come, we'll be focusing on that today, is that he does get his creativity and his sexuality in one moment in his relationship with Von Franz. So this is going to come back to haunt him, to deal with it in a conscious level, to have a friendship with this woman for whom he has sexual feelings, and to work with her in a creative vein. The next one I just mention briefly, because we'll come up with this striped business again, is Roman numeral 2 on that same page. A young dark man, shadow is present and proffers conventional views in a friendly way. I don't remember any details. I answer him angrily, calling him a swindler and telling him to leave. Of course, the swindler is Pally himself with his words. Now he disappears and I meet two men. One of them says to me that he knows a singer, and this person has explained to him an essay which a woman has dictated to me and which she had given him the singer. So again, the message and the connection with the song as the expression of his feeling. This is where his feeling really was to lie. What's the next phase of creative work in science going to look like? And it will be dealing with some of these issues. Of course, it flies in the face of the accepted paradigm. So he forgot sort of that he was a revolutionary once and overturned classical physics. And now he's being pushed to challenge those assumptions again. Then the final paragraph, which is really why I mentioned this, on page 37. Christ with a black and white striped nose appears and is very humble. Through this, my understanding of the sacrum is to be completely changed. Well, the first image there is this idea of stripes. We'll be seeing that again. And that's related to the oscillations. It's like looking at the oscillations from the top. If this is the oscillation, and the top of the oscillation is light, and the bottom of the oscillation is dark, what you see is a sequence of stripes. Does that make sense? You sure? No. I'm going to bring this around.
Say what the oscillations are between
secular time and sacred time.
Okay.
Somewhere I got a marker.
Here's the animal.
This is the oscillation. And take your pick, but this would be sacred time. And this would be secular time. And what we mean by sacred time is those moments when the synchronicity occurs. Or when you're given an opportunity that is the basis for a whole new phase of your life. Meeting a new person, getting the right job. And often those things, you probably know, do occur in sort of a funny way. You're looking, and then the job falls in your lap, and so on. So you could say synchronicity, and this would be when the world of cause and effect works. You have to get up in the morning, you have to drive your car, you have to go to work, you have to do the paperwork. But in the process, you may get an opportunity in that time, which is nothing you could have ever created. It's a gift, so to speak, from the world. Or it feels like a gift from the world. And this is what he has trouble accepting, that at certain moments you have to stop and receive. And at first glance, it may not seem like that's the thing you want. Because if you're identified with your ego and the self is presenting this, sometimes there's a discontinuity between the two. Like his meeting Von Franz and falling for her. That's one of these moments and the feelings that he had for her. He doesn't like that because he wants to be able to control everything. So he's got to learn to accept this rhythm of time that sometimes you have to work, think, control, accomplish, affect, plan, do, and then other moments, things just come to you.
I was just mentioning what the mother said. I was reading Marie Van Fonten's Projection and Recollection, and it talks about synchronicity, and in it, it can also be bad things, right? I mean, how does that work? Do you have to resist? Is your sacred mission to resist?
Well, let's take the first more prevalent case, that they seem bad. Like a dream may seem bad, but it's thwarting you in a false direction. So when you're doing the wrong thing, you may have coincidences that are stopping you from doing it. But then, upon reflecting on it, or upon reflection, you begin to realize you were given just the thing you were asking for, but you didn't know it at the time. This is the ego self distinction. But I think still there are another class, maybe I could say, where the event is destructive, but what it's asking for is an interpretation. I think, if I remember that book, she told the story of a schizophrenic guy and the light bulb blew up.
Yeah,
is that the one you're reading?
Yeah, and he took it the wrong way.
He took it the wrong way. Well, you could say a light bulb blowing up is, or it could have been worse, you know, a very serious or relatively serious event. But even though that event is negative, it's showing you that there is something going on in your life which you need to understand on a different level.
Doesn't she also talk about the fact that a synchronicity can come from a complex as opposed to from the self?
I think that's the example that...
Where the synchronicity occurs, but it's only a part of the psyche that's contained within a complex that's causing it, or synchronous with that event.
Yeah.
So that was what makes it negative.
Right. Well, in that case, it was a guy who thought he was Jesus Christ.
Well, the complex was what interpreted it. I don't think the complex caused the light bulb to go off, because what you're saying is
cause was the wrong word, period, because there is no cause.
Right. Yeah.
No, but still, I think you could say in that guy's case, he was inflated. And the light bulbs burst. Maybe I should tell folks what this is about. It's a story she tells of a guy, I think it was a patient of hers, was it not? And he had a psychotic episode. And these synchronicities seem to occur frequently around psychotic episodes. It's very weird. And one of them was that the police came to pick him up, I think, and a light bulb in the house exploded as they were taking him away. And he took that as proof that he was Christ and that his light was being diminished by the authorities. And Von Franz was saying, no, the meaning of that was that you are a light which is bursting and you aren't able to contain the insight that you are having. Now, I think you guys are both partly right in a way. You could say that that synchronicity came out of his inflated complex, but then it was to point him to the inflation. He took it in a way that supported the inflated complex. Von Franz interpreted it as a way that deconstructed his inflated complex.
And she has a part two where she writes about the Christian idea, test the spirits whether they be of God. And she talks about that Greek word, kerakai bathai, or something like that, which is the what she associates, the synchronicities that are associated with a complex. You remember that
I'm just
part?
Not sure of that word, but I'll take your word for it. I think here you can see the religious traditions are very close to what we're talking about in their concept of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to always discern a synchronicity just like you discern a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You can't just take it at face value. Sometimes you can, but sometimes you can't. Yeah.
I have a question. When you say a negative synchronicity, what you're saying is that it can point to something that will be corrective. Like his being inflated could apply to his...
Understood properly, it contains a positive message, even though the event is experienced as hostile to our well-being.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Well, now, if you imagine just looking, standing up here and looking down at this wave, and imagine that this part of the wave shows up as light, because it's closer to you, and this is farther away from you, and it's dark. So what you'll see then is a set of... Yeah, stripes. This will be light, this will be dark. This will be light, this will be dark. This will be light, this will be dark. So that's just looking at the stripes from above, as opposed to side on. Looking at the oscillation from above as opposed to side on. That's really important because we're going to see that stripe thing come back. And it's really just the oscillation theme in another, from another perspective. I was thinking of John Lennon, who said, "Life is what happens when you're making other plans."
Yeah.
See, that's the sacred time, and that's somebody who could accept that. Yes, we are captains of the ship to a large extent, but then other things happen which really direct us. And I think often it's in the area of eros and sexuality, not always, but love somehow nails you. To redirect. Oh, that's, yeah. Just a little bit more on that. See, it's Christ with the black and white nose. Christ with a black and white stripe nose appears. Through this, my understanding of the sacrament is to be completely changed. So what this is doing is putting this understanding of life at the heart of what is sacred. This is what Christ is now. Christ is accepting the rhythm of life. And therefore, what is also going on in Pali, which is going on in all of us, and why I think these are so interesting, even though they're very frustrating at times, this is the change being asked of all of us to redefine what we consider sacred. I see this when I work with theologians. I mean, I feel sorry for them. They've got to all figure out what God is. And then there's an experience that comes along, and I'm saying, yeah, here it is. This is what you've been praying for. You just don't know how to accept it. And they cut it off. That's what Pali is being addressed, to redefine what is sacred, what is Christ, what is God.
Pali is being asked to define that?
To redefine his understanding.
Okay.
He was raised Catholic.
Yeah.
And he later converted to Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that was all mental.
Do you ever write more about myself?
No. I have to tell you a joke. I told at least one person knows this, so bear with me. But the new Woody Allen movie, Scoop, have you seen it? He's so funny. There's a scene where he's at his rich garden party, and of course he's, you know, playing the big shot, joking about it. And they were talking about their religious upbringing, and somebody said to him, well, and how are you raised? And he said, well, I was raised Jewish, but in high school I converted to narcissism. It's really pretty accurate. Okay, that's the oscillation and the stripes, and its bearing on sacred. So, again, if you can see the collective import, how the unconscious is trying to get us to create a new theology, really. I think that's what it comes down to.
And do you know what that is?
Is this?
That's the oscillation.
Well, that... religious experience works through coincidences.
Okay, really?
God works through coincidences.
Okay.
And that sounds so benign until the coincidence and the gift you're given goes against what you think is proper, mm-hmm. or what you thought you wanted out of life. That you are redirected in these moments if you listen to them and if you know how to work with them.
I often think about it. I never thought about it. Even though I come from science, I never thought of it in a way, but I thought about it in somewhat way in terms of the theology that, you know, the scripture says that you are to be perfect as God in heaven or something like that. And I've often thought that those are just those momentary moments at the top of those oscillations, mm-hmm. so that they were just moments mm-hmm. of being perfect.
Yeah, of course the problem is how they translate the word.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, and this part of the problem that Jung always has is that he gets accused of sneaking into theology because mm-hmm. he uses these terms, but they actually do have precise psychological meanings mm-hmm. as far as coming into relation to self and unconscious material. And that, I think, sometimes is a problem with that theological language that's used and why Jung gets this kind of discounted almost.
Well, since you mentioned that, well, one thing I want to respond to Ted. Do you know the Greek word that's translated as perfect?
No, I know that it's supposed to be whole instead of.
Well, because it's rooted in telos.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
It's the noun form of teleology, okay. But I don't know what the word is anymore in Greek. But it means fulfilled. Not as it is translated generally in many versions, perfect, but that's aside. But just to follow up on Tom's question, because you'll probably be hearing it this year at Friends of Jung meetings. What Jung is interested in is, I'm just redrawing this, what these moments communicate is the unknown. We don't know how that works. We don't know where it comes from. Looked at from normal categories of time and space. Now, the theologian will say, well, isn't that God? And Jung would have to say, how would I know? Is it Allah? Is it Yahweh? Is it Wonkan Tanka? I don't know. That doesn't interest me, because what interests me, if we take this as those moments where the unknown manifests, is what your responsibility is to that moment. This is what interests me. This I can never know, and neither can you. Now you can say, I accept it on faith, and Jung is saying, I'm not willing to accept that split. That certain knowledge is based on faith, and certain knowledge is based on experience. That pisses the theologians off, but too bad. Because the important question in the new theology, I'm kind of thinking of this as I go along, is this relationship. What your responsibility is to that moment, not where that moment comes from. That's the new theology.
Kind of gets away from the power drive, doesn't it?
Then it gets away from the power drive. Because as soon as you say it's God defined by one cultural complex. You know, Tony Blair says we're in Iraq because God told him. George Bush says we're in Iraq because God told him. And the Al-Qaeda are killing us because they say Allah told him. That's what you get into when you literalize this experience. So, if you're talking to somebody who bases their religious views on belief, I mean, this is where you just come to a dead end. Because what I would say to them, if they could understand it, is you talk about whether that experience is God or not, ad infinitum, but what I see you doing time after time is avoiding the meaning of the experience. Stop worrying about where it comes from and start worrying about what it's asking you, and you'll have different questions, and you'll be, to my feeling, participating in this shift, this theological shift that's implied within Pali Stream material. So the way I put it,
I think for a lot of people who are not really experiencing the psychoanalytic way of looking at the relating to God, which they're used to in church and so forth, is kind of a way, though, of allowing the idea to be grasped, you know, perfection, without having this understanding of it.
Yeah.
I agree with you that would be a broader understanding.
So the way I put it is, what Jung does, he replaces metaphysical certainty with ethical obligation. And that's part of the new paradigm. You either get that or you don't get that. And if you don't get it, what you do, you run around trying to synthesize psychology and religion when it is synthesized and it's called Jungian psychology.
What I like about Jung is that it's deeper in that framework that he really shows you that. He's not really disposed to try to trample on, put down religious faith, specific path. But he tried to see, get the people to see it in a broader context. He talks about, for example, with one person he was working with, Lisa Catherine, and he worked with her to understand how a confession could be more complete, and that the priest that she met with him said that was the best confession he'd ever seen. That he wasn't really hostile to want to see that.
Well, if it's working for you, he isn't going to tamper with it. The question is, when is it not working for you? Then what do you do? And I think this is what is his alternative.
This week, have a whole article on exactly this conversation about belief. They don't talk about Jung, but they talk about Nietzsche.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is interesting, but just one thing I want to mention quickly. I was telling the women that I had lunch with today, I pulled out an intro psych textbook when I was up at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
We did the bookstore just to kind of see what they're doing in intro psych. And they had a section on Jung, which I was surprised, but they ended up by saying that he had a psychotic break, that he ended up believing that there was a different unconscious for the Jews than there were for others. Therefore, and then she put in parentheses, so much for the collective unconscious, and then she put an exclamation point. And then she ends up by saying that Jung's work eventually devolved into mysticism and philosophy, and today is only followed by certain cults that are part of the New Age movement.
So here we are.
Who wrote this? It's been an intro psych book.
But you didn't get her name.
To me, the only thing that mattered is that this is what the introductory psychology classes are studying about Jung, and it's a way to dismiss exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just—it's completely dismissive of having to think beyond how these things are coming together.
Yeah, what he's doing is he's dismantling our box for us,
exactly.
And that's very threatening.
And this is the same book that also has a whole section on Viagra and why it's important for men.
Wow,
that's psychology, eh?
Yeah.
Don't ask Grandma if it's important.
Or what you can do for her. But it just speaks to your point.
Yeah.
That's what people have ultimately said, is that he's just talking about something that's... There's no psyche in it. There's no psychology, in other words.
I thought it was, very leery of faith. But I thought it was very interesting. I think it's in the Zarathustra book, wherein, I think it was in the Green Book, I think it was one, where he talks about the fact that when people's security, psychological, completely break down, he really says that those walls that
didn't
space.
What? Those?
Walls. He calls them walls.
Uh-huh.
Keeping the demons out of it.
Right.
But he's saying that was really important in the end.
The walls?
Yeah.
It depends on how much you can handle.
That's what I mean. When mm-hmm. you get to that state where in the walls, I mean, your things are crumbling totally. I thought eventually he's basically...
Well, you see that when people are saddled with more than they can handle. But on the other hand, some of us have our walls broken down whether we liked it or not. That's probably why we're here.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to be seeing this theology stuff as a kind of counterpoint throughout, addressing Pali to re-examine what he considers sacred, and I think it's going to be all around this area. So it'll come bit by bit. Okay, that was page 36. Page 39, ninth dream, I've skipped a couple. I arrive at my former apartment. There I see a dark-skinned man in whom I recognize the Persian. He's putting objects into the house through the window. I make out a circular piece of wood and several letters. Then he approaches me in a friendly manner, and I begin a conversation with him. I won't repeat all the conversation other than to mention that the guy says that you don't have a chair in your study. So the blonde, the Persian, are both behind the new point of view that we are trying to understand, to live, and articulate. The chair image I mention here because we're going to see several times this idea of the chair being mentioned, and I take that as Pali's chair of physics. But as far as this dream inner figure is concerned, Pali does not have a chair of physics. In other words, that he isn't teaching the right stuff. What he's teaching isn't what this guy wants him to be teaching. So from this guy's point of view, he is not in the position that he should be. Why a Persian? I don't think I'll get into it too much, other than this guy gives one set of reasons. I felt it had more to do with Thus Spoke Zarathustra, that Zarathustra was a Persian. And Zarathustra was the religion in Iran and that whole area prior to Islam. And what Zarathustra does in Thus Spoke Zarathustra is to come back saying I'm being very simple now, we have to reevaluate the split between spirit and matter. I'm putting it very simply. But you see, what we're doing here, we're trying to heal the split between spirit and matter in that it's material experiences that convey a spiritual significance. These real synchronistic events are what guide us. And that is where the guidance is coming now. It's coming through the material world, not merely down from heaven.
Was Zarathustra the one to introduce the idea of good versus evil.
Right. And good, of course, became the spirit, and evil became matter. And what Nietzsche says right in Zarathustra is that Zarathustra ushered in a set of attitudes, and he's come back now to correct them. So Zarathustra would represent, you know, the macro theme of history of the establishment of Christian morality, the establishment of the subject-object split at the beginning of the scientific revolution, our split between good up, bad down, and now he's come back. So that's the Persian, I think. I think the Persian is Zarathustra, so to speak. Okay, then we go to really kind of a big one, Dream 10 on page 43. I'm going to read the whole thing, but I'll just concentrate on the main image. I see a river which flows from south to north, as does the Rhine. A dark man goes into the river and is swallowed up by it. In this moment, the mother appears and asks me what colors I have chosen. I respond by saying I have chosen black-white. You see, it's the stripes again. Now, he interprets that negatively. I don't necessarily see that as negative. I see that as his trying to give assent to this. Immediately, a hexagram appears with a black and white stripes on a piece of paper, and the mother disappears. And he says that is obviously a reference to I Ching's hexagram number one, signifying the creative power in the unconscious that begets in time. Well, these top moments, you see, they are hexagram, what hexagram number one is symbolizing, that creative, I want to say interference, it's not the right word, the creative input in time and space to redirecting our lives. Now a man with blonde hair comes. So see, we've got the dark and the light. Dark man goes into the river, and then a blonde man comes. A gush of air blows the piece of paper onto his face so that the stripe pattern remains marked on his nose. Again, we got the stripes. Why nose? Well, intuition sees into the future, and that's suggesting that this is the future development of our theology, to really coming to grips with the religious significance of synchronicity. Next, the man with the striped nose is startled as he observes three pieces of wood on the ground. He reflects for a moment, then appears to understand something and extends his hand out of the river. Immediately, a man comes out of the river. He has black hair, but a face bathed in light. So you see, there's a transformation of that white man, the blonde-haired, the dark-haired, dark-faced guy into a mixture of dark and light. So there's a synthesis of these two sides. The man with the striped nose says to the other, do you know that you have lived before? The man who came out of the river says no. The first says, everyone was shocked when you went into the river, but I noticed your post-mortal effects. For example, these three pieces of wood here. We'll talk about that in a second. This gave me the certainty that you only appeared to be dead. The man answered, now I am beginning to remember something from before. The man with the striped nose disappeared as well as the three pieces of wood. The man with the dark hair and illuminated face who had come out of the river alone remained. He seemed to be very happy to be back on land again. So if you look at the beginning of the dream and the end of the dream, just from the large point of view, there's a transformation of the dark man into the light dark man by the time the dream unfolds. Right before this, about a week before this dream, Jung and Pauli had spent an evening together talking about synchronicity. And then this dream was the reaction to their conversation. So I'm thinking that what Jung had done was drive home to Pauli just these points that we're talking about. Synchronicity is a theoretical construct. It is also an experience asking something of us. And he's beginning to entertain that as a possibility here. The other detail we mentioned was the three pieces of wood. We talked about the lower trinity. You'll remember that. The guiding function of material experiences. The upper trinity would be the guiding function of non-material experiences. And that would be what religion in the last 2,000 years has basically focused on. The Holy Spirit as a guide is a non-material phenomenon. It's an ecstatic light experience. But the lower trinity is also the guidance of the Spirit, but experienced not as light but as dark, not as ecstasy but as despair, not as spiritual but as physical. So it's simply extending the range of what we consider spiritual. And that is saying, in other words, what I just put up there. We're looking at this thing from different dimensions. Pali then being addressed to consider these issues. Why? At being someone who had his fingers on the pulse beat of history, and remember he was in despair about the bomb, what the bomb had done. He's being shown an answer to his question, where have things gone wrong? To suggest that where they went wrong is that theology has to develop. Our view of what God is needs now to expand to include the material world. That poses a challenge to science because science cannot understand these experiences, but perhaps the evolution of science in the future will. It applies to Pali personally because he's going to have a synchronistic experience with a woman that he doesn't want to have to deal with. So all of this is coming to him in many different, from many different angles. That's the basic idea there. Anything else? Is making sense? Also gives us a chance to try to tie all the different threads together that we've laid out. And you can see how they really form a unity. I think it's beautiful. What happens when you really jump into your growth with both feet? You get it personally, you get it socially, you get it religiously. All of these dimensions come up for reevaluation. Because ultimately they're all really the same. Page 50. Nothing new, but we see now this light dark figure appear. We won't see the Persian anymore, we won't see the blonde man anymore. I'm with colleagues on one of the upper floors of a house where a departmental conference on mathematics and physics is being held. I see that under my name, a course on cooking is announced. Start December 15th. Surprised, I ask a young man near me why the course begins so late in the year. He answers, because then the Nobel Prize will be granted. Probably already have the Nobel Prize. Now I notice that a fire has started in the adjacent room. I take fright, affect, run down a staircase along many floors, hurrying, panic. Finally, I succeed in getting outside. Looking back, I see that the two floors of the house where the colleagues were gathered are burnt down. I walk across the level ground and enter a garage. I see that a taxi is waiting for me and that the taxi driver fills the tank with petrol. I look more closely. I recognize him, the light, dark stranger. Immediately, I feel secure. Probably he has lighted the fire, I think, without saying it aloud. He says to me quietly, now we can refuel because upstairs there's been a fire. I will take you where you belong. Then he drives me off. So this light, dark stranger would represent that new point of view, which has theological implications, which has implications for science, which has implications for Pali personally, which has implications for our way of looking at life. That's what needs to change if we are to avoid another nuclear catastrophe, the unconscious, seems to be suggesting to Tali, because this is the answer to his question. And the stranger lit the fire, which brought Pali down, and I'm thinking that fire is the feeling for von Franz that's going to be surfacing soon. So that this erotic situation is directly linked to his creative task. And it's riveting him to the one, maybe only, the one woman who can really help him at this point. Who else understood Jung, science, and could have interested him erotically? Not too many. But there she was.
What is your reference to the mother of Brian?
Well, I'm not sure exactly. It could suggest that the work he's to do now is as important as the work that got him the Nobel Prize. I don't think he probably would have gotten a literal Nobel Prize for it, but maybe the unconscious would have given him a Nobel Prize, so to speak.
Cooking would be that kind of process.
Cooking would be the process of enduring the desire for von Franz. But that's what would help him make the shift to the new way of looking at things. The fire and his interest in her would have softened him up, and she could have helped him develop this new point of view. As well as the two of them working together, probably publishing on this. I think that's what the unconscious was asking for.
Eventually, Lane talks about the fact that they're both psychological types.
We'll get to that.
Oh, we'll get
hang on.
Okay.
Page 62. Speaking of von Franz, I'm driving, June 17, I'm driving uphill in a car. Next to me sits a somewhat younger physicist. Then the skin on my left leg begins to peel away and falls away in a heap. That would be a transformation motif, like the snake shedding its skin. Under it, a rose-colored skin is visible. Rose, of course, we know what that symbolizes. We come to the end of the wood, only a footpath continues. Mel W. brings me a hat with false monograms. So he's been given the temptation for a false roll. I give it back to him as not belonging to me. At that, W. cuts the letters out of another hat and wants to give me this hat. I also do not recognize this one as mine and give it back to him. I see now that it would only be possible to go further by foot by the light of the moon. That's the key image there. Further by foot by the light of the moon would refer to the relationship with von Franz. Because the moon would be Eros, and the light that the moon casts would be the understanding of these issues that would come out of a feeling-based relationship to von Franz. Now comes the problem, which, however, I consider dangerous. You better just concentrate on the main images here.
So you said the moonlight was, what do you call?
Eros.
The knowledge that he would...
And the light of the moon would be that way of looking at things that would have emerged as he accepted his feelings for her. So I consider dangerous. The end point of this path is doubtful as well. Bad news. The same is repeated on 63. The stranger is with me. So this guy, you see, is really now pressing on Pali. He says that I must go to an official celebration in Kuznacht and that he will come later by way of a detour. I walk and enter the Gasthof, Gasthof is Latin, like an inn. Its name, Old Sun. The Old Sun would refer to the old way of looking at things. It's a very common image in alchemy. There I find dignitaries of the community sitting at a table. Well, of course, the dignitaries of the community are not going to like what the stranger has got to say. A blonde young woman also sits at the table, and she is very sad. She is crying and says that she will lose her Swiss citizenship because she is marrying a German. So the anima is getting tied to a foreign attitude. Out of his fear of the moonlight, he's going to stay stuck in the old patriarchal light, the old sun. Does it make sense to everybody?
Are you saying foreign and old?
Well, I didn't want German. I was just trying to avoid getting into what German means. German, I think, here refers not to German personality characteristics, but to German as a philosophical, as a kind of philosophy, and that is idealism. Now, it doesn't mean that idealism in the sense, oh, he's an idealistic person, but for them, the real thing is the form. Kind of like Plato in a way. They're interested in the structure and form of experience. Well, you see, that's just head stuff. So that's where I think German, what German is meant here. Of course, the Germans have another side, Schiller, Goethe, Mozart, Beethoven, but as a philosophical system, you know, they write books like A Prelude to the Prelude of a Prelude to Study Something. And it's very intellectual.
So you mentioned foreign, and so...
Well, I said foreign just to avoid having to discuss what I just discussed.
Oh, but you said it's a way of distancing yourself.
The German here would mean German philosophical idealism, which is interested in the structure of experience, not in the flesh and blood of experience. And therefore, it's pulling him away from the flesh and blood of this woman. And at the end, one of the community dignitaries says, "Fräulein von Franz is also to marry her." See, if he connects with her in the old sun, she will not be able to give him any of the moonlight. Everything will be processed through that old rigid rationality. And it's really ironic that he is the guy who brought to the world the limits of the causal standpoint of cause and effect, of I do this in secular time and space. But in his own personal life, he couldn't accomplish that shift metaphorically seen. He stayed addicted to the old sun of cause and effect personally, even though scientifically he espoused indeterminacy. And indeterminacy is what allows us to realize there's something else going on besides cause and effect. The actions of subatomic particles don't follow causal laws. There's room for chance occurrence. And chances are what synchronicity are. And that's where we stopped. That takes us up to 65.
This one's so parallel to the word insurgents. theme of just of accepting the non-old, rigid, irrational kind of experiences. I mean, it just seems like that's wonderful.
I think I've said, for me, this material is applied Aurora Consurgence. What this guy is going through is a Sophia experience, what I call a Sophia experience, where he's gripped physiologically by desire for a woman, and that desire has a guiding function in his life. That, to me, is the essence of Sophia. Either material or physiological experience that guides. And you can see how it always is a dangerous word, but very often conflicts with the old son, the dignitaries. It's very often part of what the experience is asking of you is in violation of the moral code, but for a higher moral purpose. That's the kicker.
And that's when you control the
animal. By whomever, we don't know. But she is certainly the mouthpiece. Questions? Do you have a stretch? And we'll pick up with new stuff.